Realty Nation, it's your host, Abhi Golhar. Welcome to the Think Realty Podcast. Today's show is going to be epic. Actually, scratch that. It's going to be epically epic. Oh, yes. You know why? We're talking about government moratoriums. We're talking about data. We're talking about strategies. Everything you need to know, all in like a nice 14 minutes. So pay attention, grab your crayons, colored pencils, permanent markers, pencils, number two pencils. Oh yeah, the ones that you used to color in the SAT bubbles with. You know what I'm talking about. It's gonna be an awesome show with my good friend Rick Sharga from Realty Track. So that's coming up in just a second. Got a shout out today's sponsor, RCN Capital. RCN Capital is a national direct private lender that provides commercial loans for the purchase or refinance of non-owner occupied residential commercial properties. RCN Capital specializes in ground-up construction financing, short-term fix and flip, long-term rental financing for real estate investors. Visit www.rcncapital.com for more info. Let's get right into it. I know who you are, but the audience may not. Give us a little background bio. Who are you? What do you do?
I'm an executive vice president at Realty Track. For anybody who's not familiar with Realty Track, we're probably the largest database of foreclosure properties used by real estate investors and real estate agents. I was with Realty Track for about a decade in the early 2000s. Spent some time at auction.com and 10X and with a company called Carrington Mortgage Holdings, and have come full circle back to my roots. And we're actually relaunching a brand new website this week. And so a lot going on.
Excellent. Dude, that's you've been in the industry a long time. You've seen a lot of different market cycles, and we're talking about 2008, which was a huge one. And then, you know, what's going on with the moratoriums? What do you think is going to happen after they expire?
I've been really amazingly impressed at the job that the mortgage servicing industry has done working with borrowers during the pandemic. The government foreclosure moratorium was put in place. And then the forbearance program, and servicers were given just about no heads up that this was coming. They were given very little in the way of rules and processes. And they were given this challenge at exactly the time the government was shutting things down. So all of those servicing employees were going home and working from home for the first time. And despite that, we've seen millions and millions of what would have been unnecessary foreclosures prevented. So the program peaked with about 4.4 million people asking for forbearance in March of 2020. We're down to just a little over 2 million now. So we're down more than 50% from peak. The people who have left the program since they started leaving June a year ago have exited successfully almost 90% of the time. And the other 10% haven't necessarily failed. They just didn't leave with some sort of plan in place. So I'm very, very optimistic that as this forbearance program gradually expires, and it will trickle out over the next 12 months as people gradually leave the program, depending on when they entered it, we're gonna see a pretty soft landing rather than the tsunami of foreclosures a lot of people predicted early on. There was one economist who said that 25 to 35% of borrowers would wind up in forbearance, and that most of them would wind up in foreclosure. And I like to follow him because I always get a chuckle because he's almost always wrong. But we peaked at about 8%, which is still a, you know, fairly high percentage. We're down to half that now. And again, it doesn't look like we're going to see a wave of foreclosures coming out of forbearance.
So if I'm an investor in anywhere USA, should I be freaking out? Because that's what a lot of people are doing. I think that's a word on the street is, let's freak out because of these forbearance. Oh, I gotta freak out. I should not be freaking out.
You shouldn't be worrying. Okay. You shouldn't be freaking out. That was a lovely dance you did there, by the way. But you shouldn't be freaking out.
I'm not going to check my mic here. I've got to make sure this didn't.
you shouldn't be freaking out worrying about a boatload of foreclosures. On the other hand, you know, for a lot of investors, the truth is they'd like to see a few more foreclosures because those are good investment options. So it would be crazy for me to sit here and tell you that with 22 million jobs lost, we're not going to see an increase in default activity. But this cycle is going to behave very, very differently than the Great Recession cycle you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
In that cycle, home prices have fallen nationally 35%. States like California, Florida, Arizona prices had fallen 50 or 60%. Nobody was buying. The builders had overbuilt. And virtually all those properties wound up going back to the banks, going back to the lenders. So the way to work the foreclosure pipeline then was you wait for the banks to repossess the properties, then you try and buy them from the banks. If you do that this time, you're going to miss the whole wave. There's $21 trillion in homeowner equity today. That's an all-time record. There's way more demand for home purchases than there is supply. So virtually every borrower who finds themselves in financial distress, once the moratorium is over, once the forbearance program is over, should really be able to sell their property before they lose it to the foreclosure auction. So if you're going to play in this market as an investor, what you really need to be doing is identifying those borrowers very early in the foreclosure process so you can reach out to them directly rather than trying to wait for the auction or trying to buy the property back from the bank.
So obviously I want to reach these folks super early in the process. How do I do that? If I knew how to do that, I would be doing that already, Rick. Like, you and I would have the side deal. Here's how it would go down. We'd have the side deal. I would get all the data from some source, maybe RealtyTrack, hint. And, you know, just kind of, don't be laughing at me. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm just trying to make conversation. But anyway, how does an investor go about finding this data, getting in touch with these people early? And maybe the follow-up question to that is, if you're saying that's what investors should do, isn't everybody already doing that?
So, you know, at the risk of being hopelessly self-serving, and I appreciate you teeing up the question. Yeah, that's what RealtyTrack is really all about, and that's how investors do use the website. We publish a database that covers 90% of U.S. households, and I am absolutely certain we have the largest aggregation of foreclosure properties online available anywhere. You don't have to subscribe to RealtyTrack. There are other sites that publish foreclosure documentation, foreclosure information. You can also work with a local realtor. We have a lot of realtor subscribers who will capture this data and provide it to their investors as part of their service, as part of their relationship with their clients. So there are multiple ways to do it. You can even go into your local county recorder's office because this is all public record information. You can ask them to see the foreclosure listings, the foreclosure filings. It's a little bit more work that way, obviously, but then you're at least not having to pay anybody for a subscription. So that's the way to do it. And again, our sites like ours are really set up to make the information easier to access, to provide other information that won't be in those foreclosure documents, property characteristics, transaction histories, tax records, local sales that are nearby so you can get an idea of comps for the property. So that's what the online sources like RealtyTrack will provide. Aren't all investors doing it? No, the truth of the matter is most investors aren't doing it. A lot of investors focus on the MLS.
Yep.
A lot of investors go to the courthouse auctions or the sheriff sales. And a lot of investors try and buy the properties when the banks repossess them. My encouragement to everybody who's interested in participating in this foreclosure cycle is to not wait too late. You have to move up the food chain this time. And you also have to be willing to accept probably a little bit less of a discount if you're working with those homeowners in pre-foreclosure. But the trade-off there is you're typically getting a property in much better condition.
Yep.
because people are still living there. If you want to turn around and rent the property, in many cases, those borrowers would be able to handle a rental payment. They just can't make up back due payments on their mortgages. So you might have a tenant ready there and waiting for you. So I think more investors need to do this. More investors need to learn how to do this.
Yep.
You don't knock on somebody's door and say, "Hey, I hear you're in foreclosure." That's a good way to get thrown off the porch. So there's skills involved and there's practices that you need to learn to do in order to be successful this way.
RealtyTrack aggregates data. It may or may not be easier getting this information from another source, but frankly, the information that you provide is more thorough than me going to Fulton County or DeKalb County, wasting my time and going through that headache and process and sifting through manual books of information.
I actually had an investor tell me once that our subscription was cheaper than him paying for parking to go in the public record office in San Francisco where he lived.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah.
And by I should point this out too, with the new website, we have an introductory price of only $19.95 a month, which by far is the least expensive source in the industry. So we're trying to make it more affordable for more people.
Yeah, I believe that San Francisco guy. I mean, I think they charge $70 an hour for parking. So like that's absolutely ridiculous. What information, like, will I get the borrowers, homeowners, contact info? Is there a phone number, email address, or is it just where they live right now, where they have lived, and then I send them some kind of postcard letter?
Yeah, so right now we publish the address. We are in discussions to bring in a third-party resource to help us do phone number matching, and possibly even email appending. We're looking at that as well. Okay. It was a really Herculean effort to take what was a very, very old site and transfer everything over to this new. And it was a little bit like flying a plane, building a plane, and then moving all the passengers over while you're still in the air. So there are features that we're going to be adding that aren't there yet, but will be coming in the near future.
Let's talk about iBuyers for a second. Obviously, iBuyers have been in conversation for many years now. They've been well capitalized. They continue to be very well capitalized. And guess what? Just like everybody else, they want to buy, and they want to buy heavy. How do individual investors compete with them? And I'm sure they're also probably using RealtyTrack as a source of deal flow, potential lead flow.
Yeah, they probably work with our parent company, Adam Data Solutions, and buy national lists rather than looking at individual properties. Just because, as you pointed out, they've raised billions of dollars and they have this powder that they've kept dry. They really haven't been buying very much during today's housing market, which isn't the right kind of cycle for them. When you're in a seller's market like we are right now, when properties are moving in 3-4 days and they're selling for 10% over list, not only do individual investors have a hard time participating, but the iBuyers have a really hard time participating because they wind up losing money on every deal. So the way that individual investors need to compete with the iBuyers is to get out there earlier to try and establish a relationship with a distressed homeowner. And to point out that there are probably hidden costs with the iBuyer that they're not going to have with an individual investor buying the property. It's not unheard of for the iBuyers to put an offer in. And then once they inspect the property, suddenly the offer changes a little bit. And I do believe that it's possible for individual investors to offer those distressed homeowners a more fair price for the property. And the other thing you can do, obviously, is if you're a buy and hold investor looking for rental properties, you can offer that homeowner the option of staying in the property as a renter, which the iBuyer simply won't do. So it's you're dealing with companies with a lot of money, but not a lot of a personal touch, not a lot of local representation very often. So you have to play those aspects to your advantage.
That's fair. Rick, I've learned a lot, and I think I'm going to go ahead and get this membership because, frankly, from the data perspective and for me to get an edge, it makes sense to do. If there's one gold nugget that you have for investors in this particular market and they're looking at getting that edge and they want to say, well, you know, I want to take a look at the foreclosure leads, maybe I want to keep doing some fix and flips, maybe I want to buy and hold, what gold nugget would you have for them?
Boy, this is going to sound boring. I hate to say this, but this is a numbers game. And even before the pandemic, foreclosure activity was running at about half of the rate we'd normally expect to see. So you're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to do a lot of due diligence on these properties. And it's very likely that for every 100 properties you look at, there may only be 10 that fit your buy box. And maybe one of those is one you're going to have a chance to make an offer on. So patience and diligence are the two buzzwords. And if you're looking at foreclosures, I would say that we're most likely not to see a lot of foreclosures coming to market until late this year, beginning of next year. So now's the time to get started looking at the markets that you're in so that you're ready to go when the time comes. And oh, by the way, RCN Capital, the sponsor of this episode, is one of our finance partners. make sure you're working with the right kind of financing operation. These are not properties you can finance with a conventional 30-year fixed rate mortgage. So work with a finance company that knows what they're doing and can get you exactly the kind of loan products you need.
Excellent. Rick, thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate it, man. This has been a lot of fun.
We'll have to do this sooner than 5 years again this time. Next
time. Like I said before we got started, I think COVID just reversed the aging process for you. I think that's maybe what the shot did for you, right? It's like, oh, I'm just going to make Rick look 5 years younger. It's great.
Well, I guess Moderna means modern and modern means young. So here we go. That works.
I never thought of it that way. Mind blown. Look at that. Rick, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. We'll be in touch.
My pleasure.
See ya. Think Realty Nation, this next segment is brought to you by RealtyTrack. RealtyTrack is the leading source of foreclosure data for real estate investors and real estate agents. Receive the most up-to-date and trusted database of foreclosures, bank-owned properties, MLS listings, auctions, and short sales. Analyze property insights with comprehensive data and unlimited save searches with no need to pay per record fees. Visit RealtyTrack.com today to sign up and get started. So what's the next big wave? Now, we just finished talking about foreclosures, which isn't necessarily a wave, as we heard from Rick. But if you were to invest in, say, motels, what could you potentially do with them? For those investors getting an edge, looking for an edge, this is your segment as well. There was a recent article written by Ellis Hammond on thinkrealty.com titled "The Next Big Wave, Motel to Multifamily Conversions." And in this article, Ellis talks about five reasons why the next big investment opportunity very well could be motel to multifamily conversions. Number one, quote, "There's a massive tenant base that needs affordable housing and no one else has a solution." Okay, check mark, true. Number two, and number one, I know it's true because downtown Atlanta, for example, where I live, rental properties are pretty expensive. And you want to rent a condo or even a apartment complex, you're looking at $2,500 to $3,000 a month for a two-bed, two-bath. I know. Crazy, right? Number two, many mom-and-pop-owned motels will face foreclosures as stimulus money dries up later in 2021, creating greater buying opportunities for investors. Interesting. I do want to probably check that later this year. Maybe. But the challenge that I have is there's also a lot of equity that could be in these motels, so maybe they could tap that for a little relief. Okay, number three, as cap rates compress in large multifamily, there'll be huge demand from investors for higher yielding assets, which these motel conversions can provide. So I actually believe this one. There has been cap rate conversion. Cap rate, keep in mind, is NOI divided by acquisition price. So That has been compressing for quite a while. No surprise there. Are investors looking for 13, 14, 50% yields? I think so. So motel to multifamily, you're really forcing that appreciation. Could be an interesting play. Number four, quote, "It's much cheaper and much faster to convert an existing building than start from scratch." Yes, this is obviously true. It does take longer time to build a multifamily project or a multifamily complex than it is to buy an existing one and renovate it. Number five, the current administration sees affordable housing and helping the lower middle class as a huge priority over the next 4 years. These types of projects have a likely potential to earn favorable tax incentives and government-sponsored vouchers. Agree. So I would say Ellis did a good job. Just saying, I should do some article reviews or reaction reviews next time. But no, I really think that there's a good case for motel to multifamily conversions, especially for a lot of investors that have really big appetites and want to see higher returns on investment. Okay, I think that's the show, guys and gals. Let me wrap it up here. I certainly appreciate all the attention and all the questions that have been pouring in over the last couple of weeks and last couple of months about, hey, where the heck is this economy going? And we did cover a lot of topics with Rick today, especially that moratorium. So for those of you that are causing a lot of chaos in your brain, don't do that anymore. You can sleep well at night. Got to thank today's sponsor, RCN Capital, a national direct private lender that provides commercial loans for the purchase or refinance of non-owner occupied residential and commercial properties. RCN Capital specializes in ground-up construction financing, short-term fix-and-flip financing, and long-term rental financing for real estate investors. Visit www.rcncapital.com for more information. Please, please keep in mind, we've got the Think Realty Hybrid Conference and Expo in Baltimore this year, coming up September 18th and 19th. Visit thinkrealty.com/Baltimore and purchase your ticket. And I'll let you in on a little secret. You get a buy one, get one deal. That's right, BOGO Town. Enter the code PODCAST when purchasing two tickets, and you get one for free. So you buy one and get one. See how that works? With code PODCAST. You know how to get in touch with me anywhere online. Check me out on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, wherever. Just type in my name into Google. Find me, shoot me a message, hit me up, and get me a question. I'd love to answer it for you on the next episode of the Think Realty Podcast. Until next time, happy investing.